Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bullet Points, and it is your first source of firearms news and information in Australia. Coming to you from Drain the Billabong Studios, which is located deep in the heart of Central West New South Wales. Another big show for you this edition with Laura Patterson from the Shooting Industry Foundation of Australia and Chris Sainsbury, who is the president of SSAA. Laura returns to the program. Also coming back to the show is one of the upper house representatives for the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party in New South Wales, is Robert Borzak. So, ladies and gentlemen, strap in, because it's going to be a wild ride.
There's been a few articles late that outline the expenditure of the so-called gun lobby in the most recent two state elections, and CIFA, the Shooting Industry Foundation of Australia, was one of the major driving forces behind those campaigns. To give us more insight into CIFA's involvement is Laura Patterson. Laura, how are you?
I'm very well, Luke. Thanks for having me.
No problems at all. So the media's attempt to scare the public by writing articles and telling them how much was donated by pro-gun organisations, one, really didn't work, and two, was quite pathetic at the same time.
Well, it's really interesting because there are two points that I think your listeners will be interested in. The first one is, CIFA was open right from the first day about our support for the Flick'em campaign in Queensland. So when the media reports came out, you know, that the gun lobby, la, 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 you know, the reality was that everybody knew that already. The other thing is that we actually are trying to start getting the media a bit smarter, a bit cleverer, a bit more informed about who is involved with the Shooting Industry Foundation of Australia. And we're just a group that represents business in defence, law enforcement and civilian markets. So we don't consider ourselves to be a gun lobby, and we're not really working with partners on a formal basis in the way that you would expect a normal kind of lobby group to work. So the idea that there's this ascendant, you know, growing sort of gun lobby in Australia is probably, you know, a figment of their imagination. I think what we're getting better at is demonstrating to everyone the value of the firearms industry in Australia. So value in terms of dollars, but also culture. It's really important to hunters like, you know, the people in my family, for example, that we're able to go and hunt on public land, that we're able to ethically harvest food for our families, and that we're able to participate in any shooting recreation that falls within the legal, you know, parameters. So, yeah, look, there was a lot of media kind of noise. Yeah, but I think the really interesting thing was that it worked. So in Queensland, there was the lowest primary vote for the major parties, they being Labor and Liberal National Party, in the history of that state. So we reckon, you know, in total, the Flick'em campaign was $500,000 worth. CIFA was a part of that. We certainly didn't tip in the whole $500,000, and we're very open about who the partners on that project were. But it was very successful. We came within one seat of having a minority government in Queensland.
Yeah, well, the Flick'em campaign was in full swing in the Queensland election, and for me, it just shows that a few bucks and a few volunteers can really make the majors adjust their tactics.
Yeah, well, you know what was really great from our perspective was we set up a Flick'em community on Facebook, and we had 3 million, a reach of 3 million in 28 days. Yeah. Yeah, so look, for us, the really encouraging thing was how motivated ordinary everyday people are to get on board something that they believe in. And Flick'em, you've got to remember, we didn't run Flick'em on a firearms platform at all. It was about assets, public asset sales. It was about cost of living, electricity prices, and health expenditure being too focused in Brisbane and not enough across the rest of regional remote Queensland. And those were issues that people, you know, they really care about, and they're issues that are important to everyone all across Australia. And so that was really amazing, the amount of grassroots support that the campaign actually attracted. You know, we had people holding up placards in Bundaberg we had people calling up and saying, hey, can I procure a couple of $1,000 to run some radio ads in my hometown? People printed downloadables off the website. There were caps. There were, you know, people putting up signs on the back of toilets in pubs and community notice boards. And I mean, aside from the fact that we came so close to, you know, that minority government, and we wanted that because we wanted good representation up there in Queensland. It's the grassroots support was just absolutely fantastic. And I think that that whole Flick'em approach represents an interesting opportunity for projects in other states as well.
Well, another interesting one was the Tasmania election, which was just a few months ago, was particularly interesting with the changes that were announced before election day. And the Liberals poll actually went up after that.
Yeah, well, it shows you that quality firearms policy wins elections. So Australians, I think these days, are pretty sick of that old visceral gut feel, you know, guns are wrong. I think we've got a very mature discussion around firearms in Australia now. I think people understand that firearms are a tool, but they are also a piece of equipment for recreation, and that appropriately licensed and permitted individuals can be trusted to do the right thing. What Australians don't want, and what Tasmanians proved they don't want, is a state where they're not able to expand to its full potential tourism, for example, because of regulations around firearms ownership and use that might inhibit that for no community safety gain. So there was a lot of work done with a firearms reference group in Tasmania. There were delegates from a wide number of different stakeholder groups down there. The policy was distributed, I think, like weeks before the election. It was also up on the website. It wasn't one of the, you know, 20 or so major policies that the Liberals ran with in their sort of advertising campaigns and their lead up to the election. But the idea that it was a somehow secret is completely wrong.
Obviously, there's an irony as well when Tasmania is the first state to move in the right direction and being the state that suffered the Port Arthur massacre. But as you said, it shows that a good firearms policy can change a certain vote in a certain way, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, look,
adopt that.
Absolutely. And I think what Flick'em in Queensland and the Liberals win in Tasmania has showed is that if you do quality independent research, which is what CIFRA has done, we did a lot of independent polling in Queensland, and we're doing some more in New South Wales and Victoria leading into their elections. You can understand what people are actually concerned about. And people in general are not concerned about law-abiding firearms owners, you know, the million of us that do the right thing day in, day out, over and over and over again. And so quality firearms policy is something that assures and reassures the community of its safety, security and sovereignty, and it's one which allows appropriately licensed and permitted people to undertake the activities that they want to undertake. And it also, you know, works for defence and law enforcement when they have, you know, the equipment that they need to do their job as well.
Speaking of the media, like we did earlier, they actually jumped on your meeting with Peter Dutton with some pretty outrageous comments made on social media. But how did that actually turn out with the meeting with, I'm sorry, is it Home Secretary now or something like that?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's interesting, isn't it? He's got so many things under his umbrella. But yeah, so Minister Dutton is the head of Home Affairs. And then the, law enforcement and cyber security minister who sits underneath him, is a guy called Angus Taylor. So we have not heard back yet. We only provided them with the proposal to establish this, industry to government basically, you know, talk mechanism at the end of February, and we're looking forward to a positive response. We've got a lot of work done in trying to explain to the guys in Canberra who we are, what we do, and why we should be a trusted participant in our firearms policy development. And so, you know, we're optimistic, but we haven't heard back from the man himself yet.
Can you give us a quick rundown again on what the WA transport issue is on firearms, and if you have an update for us?
Yeah. Okay. So, what we need to remember about each of the Australian states is that they make their own laws and regulations, and that often means that we have different laws from state to state. One rule that's different from WA to the rest of Australia, for example, is that transport companies need to apply to Western Australian Police for approved carrier status. Now, that means that they need to meet certain criteria and achieve the correct status in order for them to be allowed by law to transport firearms and firearm parts. So the upshot is that if a supplier from out of state sends a firearm via a carrier that's not approved, so Australia Post, for example, isn't an approved carrier in WA, then that's a breach of their policies and regulations. And potentially the person carrying the firearm, so the driver of the truck or the person receiving the firearm, can be pursued under their Crimes Act. So what happened in September 2017 was that postmasters across Australia postmasters were advised that they were no longer to take for delivery into WA or within WA firearms, parts and accessories. And that basically shut down secondhand trade into and out of WA. And it's also meant that the vast majority of dealers in WA don't have access to an approved carrier. So if you're operating a gun shop in the centre of Perth and within about a 70-kilometre radius of Perth, then you probably got fairly good reliability of supply. And by that I mean if you order a gun, it's probably going to get delivered to your shop. If you don't live in those areas, and you can remember how massive WA is, so a lot of firearms dealers don't live in those areas or don't work in those areas, you don't have access to an approved carrier and therefore can't receive firearms into your store, which you'd appreciate as a pretty, you know, career-limiting situation for them. We've done two surveys now of the impact of these transport restrictions on businesses in WA. At an industry level, it's in the millions of dollars. And at the dealer network level, it's in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. So what we know is that the transport restrictions over there have stopped people hiring new workers where those new workers would otherwise have been hired. We know that it's costing thousands of dollars in turnover and profit to businesses which are largely just mum and dad businesses, and who have also recently had to upgrade their security measures for other reasons over there. So they've been hit with these massive upgrade bills, and now you know, they're finding it difficult to get firearms into their stores to sell to customers. And the other really big issue we've got out there is that regional and remote firearms users, whether they be sporters, hunters, farmers, whatever, don't have any way to get their firearm back for warranty repair or servicing. And as a result, there's a possibility that there are people out there that are using firearms because they must, that may not be up to scratch. So we're very concerned about the health and safety aspect of this as well. So what CIFA has been doing, we've been working with SSAA WA over there and with the West Australian Firearms Traders Association. Had multiple meetings with West Australian Police, multiple meetings with the Police Minister. We have been given an undertaking that they're going to find a solution to the problem, but unfortunately we don't have a solution to the problem as yet. But I know there's some some stuff happening in the next couple of weeks. But I think it's probably fair for us to say at this point that we're becoming quite frustrated with the situation over there, and we would be looking for a solution, yesterday, because we can't continue to watch these family businesses suffer, as badly as they are. I mean, it's an absolute catastrophe over there. It's wrong and it's unfair, and it's not made anyone in WA any safer.
So we'll see if we'll be going to the SSAA Shot Expo in Sydney.
We certainly will, yep. So last year we went to the SHOT Show in Brisbane. My dog's going crazy in the background, sorry.
Right.
Yep, so we will definitely. We'll be going to the Sydney SSAA SHOT Show, SHOT Expo, I should say. We did go to Brisbane last year, and that was a big success. That's where we launched our super rebrand and kind of got in front of a few people and said, "Yoo-hoo, over here waving." And we found that to be very successful. I loved it on a personal note because I love getting out and about and talking to everyday shooters. I think that there's a lot of intelligent and really great ideas people who are involved in our sport and our recreation and our industry. And I always get a thrill from saying g'day to people. So if your listeners are in Sydney and coming to the SHOT Expo, come and say hello. We're also going to be launching our firearm security platform while we're there. And that's basically got to be the Shooting Industry Foundation of Australia's strategic plan for the next 12 to 18 months. And we're working on that at the moment, which is kind of fun. And then we're also going to be over in Perth in October, and we're going to run a politician shoot over there. So that's a really good opportunity to, put a face to a couple of the names on both sides, and there'll be local state politicians there as well as the federal MP Ian Goodenough, who's a fairly keen shooter himself. So that'll be good.
How do you reckon the Aussie shooters will go in the Commonwealth Games?
I'm really looking forward to it. I tried so hard. Same to tried so hard to like scan some tickets, but I'm in Victoria and Brisbane's a bit of a trek for a couple of days shooting. But look, I think we're in with a real chance. We've been watching with real interest the competitions leading up to Brisbane. I know Catherine Skinner and Letitia Scanlon are in great form. James Willett's performing really well. Ashlyn Jones has just won the Junior World Champs.
Absolutely.
So it's an exciting time. And I love to watch really great shooters. I wish I was one of them. I'm not. But I just
makes tunes.
I just really love, you can see them preparing, you can see them blocking everything out. The patience, persistence, and precision that they demonstrate is unparalleled. For me, shooting is my favourite sport to watch. I think that the patience and persistence and precision and just ability to block everything out and just look at that target and achieve that goal is quite inspiring. And, I think that Australia's got a great chance to come home with some steel, and good on them for all of the work that they do, all of the training they do. They don't get a whole lot of support. And I think that, if we win a couple of medals, then that'll be great for Australia and great for our sport.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Laura Patterson from the Shooting Industry Foundation of Australia, and we thank her for her time today.
Thanks. And if you want to find out more or keep up to date with us, just hit us up on social media. We're at CIFACOMS.
Transfer complete.
We have on the line one of the most motivated SSAA branch presidents you can find. Not only does he live up to his word, but his foresight and can-do attitude is exactly what is needed for change. His name is Chris Sainsbury, and he's the president of SSAA Errolwarra. Welcome back to Bullet Points, mate.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
So last time we talked, you've been doing a little hunting, which I'm jealous of.
Yes, that's right, mate. This evening I am down in Bindabyne, gracing the lovely Snowy Mountain deer hunting.
Well, that sounds very interesting. It'd be nice and cold up there now.
It is quite chilly this morning, and it's even colder tonight. So,
well, you get that fire roaring, mate, you should be right.
Yeah, mate, that and a couple of beers, mate, and we'll be in for a good night.
You had any success so far?
Yeah, mate. We've shot three does. We shot two does and a spiker this morning. After we set up, we probably drove about 200 metres from campsite, and Maitland Weir shot a little young fawn at just over 200 metres with the 30.06. Then I managed to dispatch the doe at very short range with the 223. And after that, we drove probably a couple of kilometres down the road, and I managed to close the distance on a young spiker and shot him at just over 200 metres with the 223.
Sounds awesome, mate. So the SSA Illawarra made a new acquisition lately.
Yeah, that's right. Over the last couple of months, or over the last 12 months, we've been working proactively on trying to buy and build a mobile cooling trailer. About 2 months ago now, myself and the club secretary drove down to Melbourne and picked it up. At this stage, we're the only SSAA branch in New South Wales who owns and runs their own mobile cooling trailer. It was at a significant cost, meanwhile, but it is reaping its benefits and rewards for the members and for anyone who wants to use it.
Well, it'll be actively promoting the harvest of game meat, not only in state forests, but on a private property as well.
Well, that's exactly right. That's what we designed the cool room trailer for, and it's not just to sit around to look pretty and go to expos and stuff like that. It's for the members to use, and it's priced at a point where it's very, very affordable for the members to use. At the moment, we charge $30 for members to use it per day. The trailer in itself weighs 1.1 tonne and then has a payload capacity of 1.4 tonne. So even for the most avid of hunters and those of keen of hunters, they're going to have a hard time trying to fill it full of deer or pigs or anything
Absolutely.
Like that. And that's what it's for. It's for the members and it's for them to start with.
Well, it's like I said to Jeff Jones, the president of SSAA National in Melbourne at the Shot Expo, it's a double-edged sword when you can hunt and eat the meat that you have fallen, and not only is it the healthiest low-fat, high-protein meat you can get, but the environment thanks you as well.
Well, that's exactly right. For us, it's about encouraging the guys to get out and go hunting, and then also being able to keep their meat and keep it safely and so it doesn't get fly-blown and doesn't get hot and bloated and everything else like that. That's why we have the mobile cool room trailer. So it goes straight from the field, straight to the cool room, once it's been processed, and then it ends up on someone's plate for dinner later on. Like I've said to many people in the past, that the SSAA Illawarra branch is serious in representing its hunters, and we believe that New South Wales and National should be proactively and actively promoting their hunters. We didn't believe they were doing so, so we took it upon ourselves to do something for the hunters and give this back to them.
Speaking of hunting and the outdoors culture that we have here in Australia, the SSAA Illawarra has organised a terrific looking expo for later on in October.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So last year, I came up with an idea, which I took to the committee, regarding a outdoor and adventure expo for the members of SSAA and for the members of all two fraternities. We've identified a shortfall, in engagement and not just engagement, but trying to actively promote and break down the stigmatisation between shooters, hunters and the general public. I'd approached New South Wales regarding this, and was told, well, no, it's not something that we really do. That was fine and New South Wales was entitled to take that opinion. They've now since changed their mind and are now actively assisting the branch. But our aim is not to do it for any personal gain. It's a gain for the businesses and for the members. We see a lot of our business and now a lot of people going now overseas to buy their products and sourcing their products from the internet. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to integrate those people who want to buy something with the retail and give something back to the businesses. And also at the end of the day too, we're trying to actively promote the shooting sports. And it doesn't matter if you're a SSAA member, Federation Hunting Club member, Shooters and Fishers Party member. We're just trying to break down the stigmatisation that shooters and hunters aren't bad people.
Well, it looks like you have all the bases covered when it comes to the stalls that are going to be there. Can you just give us a quick rundown on who will be there?
Of course. So, of course, we've got Bullet Points podcast who are turning up. We have.
Yes, we will be there with the digital mastermind, Scott. Yes, he'll be there too.
Oh, I hope so. We also have Safari Firearm. We have the New South Wales Mobile Air Rifle Trail that's going to be in attendance. We also have Hunting the Menu, and we have various other large businesses that are coming from far and wide. Also, what we're doing is we're putting on butchering and capering courses throughout the day for the members to see how it's done. We're also putting on a live venomous snake display, and then we're also doing a live kids petting zoo, face painting and jumping castle. So it's not just targeted at the hunters and the diehard shooters. It's targeted to be a family orientated day, so where mum and dad can come along and bring their kids along, and everyone can have a great day and try to enjoy the outdoors.
Well, yeah, it sounds more like a family fun day than an expo, but you get that.
Yeah, that's right. So at the end of the day, like I said, we're trying to break down the stigmatisation between shooters and the generalised public. Of where it is that as most people will see at the moment, they see, or the average person sees, shooters and hunters as villains and everything else like that there. Our expo is trying to steer people away from that idea and show people that we're everyday average people of society.
Also later on this year, there will be an SSAA New South Wales board election. Just give the listeners a rundown on what will happen at the AGM later on this year.
So I believe it's on May 26th to 27th this year. There's currently four positions that are up for election this year. Lance Miller being the president, who's up for re-election. And there's also three other ordinary board positions. As it stands at the moment, I will be supporting Carl Smith for the New South Wales board position as president. And then I also will be running as one of the delegates or one of the other three positions for the New South Wales board.
Well, every year we hear that it's really hard to get people to the AGM. I don't know why, because Sydney's one of the biggest member-based clubs in New South Wales. Well, it is in New South Wales. How important is it, if you're not happy with the way things are going, how important is it to get there and change the dynamic of the board?
Well, it's absolutely imperative that we have the branches that turn up. Unfortunately, if the branches don't turn up and give their direction to the board, then we're going to continue to face the same old issues that we've been facing over and over and over and over again. Nothing's ever going to change. There's been comments in the past that the branches are asleep at the wheel and trying to talk with some branches akin to drinking Kool-Aid. At the end of the day, New South Wales needs to get in the 21st century, and they need to better represent their members, and they need to better represent their branches. It's my opinion of the SSAA as SSAA president that New South Wales doesn't listen to the branches. And this is why we have issues with New South Wales board. I personally don't have any issues with any New South Wales board member. However, I do have issues with the governance or the way that New South Wales is run. And I personally would like to see a good majority of the board replaced and replaced with new fresh blood, with people with new fresh ideas.
Well, it's the same as every other election. You've got to do your homework, and you've got to get in contact with the candidates and have a chat, see what their vision is for the future of the SSAA New South Wales. And if it doesn't fit your beliefs, then you move on to the next one.
Well, that's exactly right. I encourage all the branches, and any branch for that matter, who wants to speak to me regarding any perceived issues that they may have with New South Wales, or any issue for that matter. Again, we need to go forward. We need to go forward with a new direction. And I believe that the running mates who I'm running with, and that's Carl Smith, Richard Drozdowski and Chris Gosling, all have that idea, and we all have a new idea of how the board should be run, and we're representing the shooters of New South Wales.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Chris Sainsbury, and he's the president of SSAA at Illawarra. We thank you for all his efforts, and we thank you for his time today.
And I thank you.
We've had a move in the right direction here in New South Wales, and to tell us all about it, he's one of the upper house representatives for the Shooters, Fishers, Farmers Party, Robert Borzak. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks very much, Luke. Good to be back.
We appreciate the work the Shooters, Fishers, Farmers Party has done of late. Can you give the listeners a rundown on the good news, please?
Well, it's not final yet, but we have seen some movement at last in relation to the paintball regulation. We've been working with the paintball industry, we being the party, for the last 4.5-5 years in terms of trying to get paintball removed from the firearms laws. And it's been on again, off again. We've been through 2 premiers, 4 ministers, I think probably 5 ministers in that nearly 5-year period, each of them promising, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Everyone says the same thing. Why would you regulate paintball, the paintball industry, which obviously has nothing to do with firearms, in the same breath with the same regulations and same laws as you do firearms and shooters and firearms ranges? And of course, the answer is it makes no sense at all. But then when it actually came to getting it done, including premiers, oh yes, I nod, wink, 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 we'll fix it all. And of course, nothing gets done. But interestingly enough, and you know, you can only draw a conclusion from cause and effect, I suppose. Now that we are busily announcing candidates for lower house seats and campaigns between now and March next year, and the paintball industry letting it be known to the government that they have an extensive number and list of paintball participants right across the state in almost every electorate, that all of a sudden they've decided to sit up and listen. And now that they seem to be moving, and we may well, and I'm only saying may well, even though this is the strongest indication we've had, see some change by effectively deregulating that industry out of the paintball, deregulating paintball out of the firearms regulations and all.
So in your opinion, what would this do to the paintball industry?
Well, I think what it will do to the paintball industry is I think it lowers the age to 12. By deregulating it, it will remove a lot of the onerous expense. Even safe storage requirements, for example, were put on people who had paintball markers, not paintball guns. I don't call them guns; they're markers. And all the other costs related to having those markers registered and stored in gun safes and registered. And all the record keeping requirements by the paintball companies, all the inspections required of safes, inspections required of ranges every 5 years, ranges needed to be licensed. The whole thing was ridiculous. And I think what we'll see is a massive removal of the burden of regulation and red tape off the industry. And maybe, hopefully, we'll see the industry start to flourish again. And hopefully we'll see more and more people participating in this sport, rather than what was happening was it was effectively, especially when times get economically a bit tough, being choked off by over-regulation, unnecessary regulation.
Well, as you just said, the paintball markers were classed as firearms, so in retrospect and common sense, that would take them off all the onerous import restrictions and tariffs and stuff that they have on them too.
Yeah, well, that is a federal issue. The importation of paintball markers is something to do, more to do, of course, the import and export laws are something that gets dealt with in Canberra and not here in New South Wales. So, you know, if they want to get that sorted out, which they should, because there is no risk to public safety in relation to these matters with paintball markers, the next stage is that they have to start, and we're certainly happy to help them, start a campaign at the federal level to get the same thing done. I think New South Wales, if this comes about, will be the first state in Australia that has, at last, since 1996, started to show some bloody common sense.
Well, if these proposals are put through, there would be absolutely no reason that airsoft shouldn't be deregulated anyway.
Well, airsoft, I think, is in the same boat, except the sticking point with airsoft are the ridiculous appearance laws that we are stuck with in this state. And that's another battle for another day. And if the airsoft people want to really get serious about it, they have to start doing what the paintball people did over five years ago, and that was start working with our party all over Australia to start getting some movement in that area. It's no use just chiming in at the end of something and saying, oh, and paintball too, and airsoft too. They need to actually get out there and do something about it and put their foot forward and get out there and actually support If they don't do that, well, they simply won't get what they need, unfortunately.
We all know what's happening to our drought-affected farmers, not just here in New South Wales, but in Queensland as well. And farmers in both states are getting hit pretty hard by their governments. How ridiculous is a $20,000 low-interest loan when you're already in debt like most farmers are?
Yeah, well, it is ridiculous. We're of the view, and we certainly, our member for Orange, Phil Donato, yesterday in the lower house in the Legislative Assembly, actually moved a motion that effectively called that out for what it was, and that is too little, too late, and in the wrong format. Giving more loans to people that are already experiencing massive funding shortfall, even if it is interest free or it's low interest or deferred, et cetera, just won't work. And basically what he did in a motion yesterday was laid out our party's policy in relation to these things, and that was that that we should be looking at drought now as a natural disaster and be framing funding and support along those lines, emergency funding legislation, in other words, to make sure that farmers get the support they need through the tough times. The trouble is, no one, of course, will know how long that will last. The trouble is that nobody knows how deep a drought like this will get. But Australia has experienced it in the past. Certainly, New South Wales has too. The government, during the good times, has taken the opportunity to sign up to federal programs for drought mitigation and drought preparation on properties. And Donato attended a property over the weekend which had spent over $250,000 on extra hay sheds and special storage and extra water storage and all that sort of stuff. But in the end, all that money, and a large part of it was, I believe it was a matching grant, was their own money. It's only lasted them 6 months, and now they're at the stage where they're back to where they started from. So offering a $20,000 loan when they're spending $10,000 to $20,000 a week just on fodder alone is, you know, plainly ridiculous.
The leader of the Nationals, John Barilaro, had a Facebook page on his page where he had some nice little music, but there was no comments from any of the farmers that he was supposedly listening to. That's pretty insulting to our intelligence when they're actually the ones that got rid of the drought assistance for farmers and then bring in this ridiculous $20,000 loan. Where do you think this will actually affect what the rusted on Nationals voters will be doing in the next election?
Oh, I think it will. I think it's going to be a very, very key part of what they're now not doing, and that is they're now not supporting the bush the way they traditionally did. At the last election, you could even argue at the election before that, 2011 and 2015, that drought really wasn't an issue in New South Wales. We've had a particularly good long-term, long run of good, decent rains, but now we're going back into one of those dry spells. And the law since 2011 has changed, and the government, primarily the Nationals, who look after this area, have sought to so-called drought-proof, but the drought-proofing, they've removed by and large the majority, if not all, of the basic supports that were in place. Queensland still has very good drought relief laws, but we're going to go even further. As I said earlier, we want drought declared as a natural disaster and have it treated through emergency funding legislation. And, I'll read you a few words out from our notice that went on the notice paper yesterday, and this basically frames our policy in this area. One, we call on the government to immediately commence and swiftly undertake the necessary steps to assess, determine, and, where appropriate, declare drought-affected areas of rural and regional New South Wales as a natural disaster. Okay, that's something that's not done. Two, we call on the government immediately to provide uncapped emergency funding to transport stock fodder and water to areas where primary producers are experiencing drought, constituting a natural disaster. Keep in mind that part of this process that they've altered is they've removed all the subsidies for stock fodder
transport. Okay, it's all gone. So offering them a $20,000 low interest loan, how is that going to work? They used to have specific targeted arrangements for support. Three, call on the government to provide uncapped emergency funding for transport of stock from areas experiencing drought for the purpose of sale, slaughter, or to areas where the fodder is available. And four, we call on the government to cease administrative control and legislate drought relief immediately. In other words, what they're doing now, of course, is doing things by administration. We want new legislation to make sure that this gets fixed.
So on a lighter point, have you been able to get out and do any hunting or shooting?
Good question. April last year when I was in New Zealand, I was doing a five-day wilderness, west coast wilderness hunt. Actually, to cut a long story short, the backpack on my back, I did the hunt really well, pretty tough on the old knees, but I did it pretty well. But part of that process was I tore all the ligaments off my right shoulder, which was no fun. And then I had a fair bit of pain. I hunted right through the whole season, hoping it was going to go away. I didn't realise what I'd done. Finally got into hospital in October. The doctor fixed what he could. By that stage, it was too late to fix it properly. But anyway, he did a pretty good job. Up till last month, just going through rehab, all going pretty good. And then I got out for a couple of early hunts in March. And I ended up actually, couple of guys up around Armidale way we were hunting with the local branch members up there. They shot some fallow deer. I didn't shoot anything in the end. And they ended up cutting the meat up using a bandsaw. And I actually put my hand in the bandsaw accidentally and I wasn't even using it. And I won't bore you with the detail of how that happened, but it was just a momentary lapse of concentration and zap. I had my right hand cut where the hand joins the wrist, and that put me out for the rest of the season. And I got it on about a month into healing, and I've got tingling back in the tops of my hand and in my fingers, which is good, and I've got the tendons growing back, I hopefully, to full strength, but they tell me that'll take 12 weeks. So I bugged up my hunting season this year completely. But anyway, that's the way things go. Yeah, old and exactly. Silly, I suppose you'd call me. But I am going to go to New Zealand next week for a week. I'm going on the 9th for a week to spend some time, hopefully, running around the hills there again. And I've got to be very careful because the tendons don't, so the doctor told me, won't fully to full tensile strength for about after three months. So I'm only a month into it. By next week, I'll be six weeks into it. But I've got a hand specialist who's going to make a prosthetic up for me. So if I ever fall, which I hope I won't ruin the whole thing and have to do it again. So what's the lesson out of that?
Be careful.
As you get older, you've got to be more careful.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is one of the Upper House representatives for the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party, Robert Borzak. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks very much, Luke. All the best, mate. Cheers.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for in this edition of Bullet Points. If any branches of any shooting clubs have information that they would like to get out, please feel free to email me at bulletpoints@talkup.com. We are trying to get more candidates in the board election for SSAA New South Wales, and in the next edition, we will have a good chat to one of them and much, much more. So until then, shoot straight and eat pleurisy soon.